Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a presentation titled Gangs in Omaha. The guest speakers will be Lieutenant Ken Kanger, a 21-year veteran of the Omaha Police Department and the man in charge of the department's gang unit, and Janae Pancook, Executive Director of Impact One. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, June 19, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Ann Peterson, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
In the early 1980s, the Omaha Police Department didn't even use the term gang activity. In spite of both what they knew and what the media knew, the public spin was that gangs were in Minneapolis and Kansas City and, of course, Chicago, but not in Omaha, Nebraska. That changed over the years, and today the Omaha Police Department's gang unit works 7 days a week, collaborating closely with schools, the Omaha Housing Authority, and uniformed patrol officers, whom they consider their eyes and their ears. Two individuals who know the situation well join us today. Lieutenant Ken Kanger, who is in charge of the Omaha Police Department's gang unit, has 21 years of law enforcement experience. He spent 4 years with the Douglas County Sheriff's Department before joining the department in 1997. Lieutenant Kanger has worked in various units within the department, spending the majority of his time in the homicide unit, both as an officer and a sergeant. Prior to his law enforcement career, Lieutenant Kanger graduated from Northern Illinois University with a degree in criminology. And Janae Pancook, Executive Director of Impact One. Janae was born in North Omaha in the early 60s, and after receiving her bachelor's degree in education, Janae began a career with the State of Nebraska Department of Corrections. While serving in various capacities throughout the agency, Janae witnessed the generational effects of crime, poverty, undereducation, and lack of employment opportunities as individuals returned to prison over and over. As program director for the Nebraska Department of Correction, Janae was responsible for reentry, education, volunteers, and classification management. In this position, Janae recognized the number of resources available and the red tape for an individual to access the services disenfranchised individuals from participating in supported programs once they return to our communities. Janae became the executive director of Impact One in February of 2013, with the vision and determination to facilitate services, resources, networking, programming, and accountability for those who truly desire to live a pro-social, law-abiding life. Please join me in welcoming Lieutenant Kanger and Janae Pancook. So we thought we would begin our forum today with Lieutenant Kanger giving us an overview of the current situation of gangs in Omaha. Lieutenant Kanger?
Thank you. Good afternoon. I appreciate you inviting me up here to talk to you a little bit about the gang situation in the city of Omaha and to answer some questions. I'll tell you a little bit about the situation. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the police department, how the gang unit is structured, and the resources the mayor's office and the chief of police have put toward the gang issues that we see here in the city. And kind of give you a historical overview of when we started to see gangs come into the city of Omaha, and over the course of the last several years, we've had to address certain issues, and I think we've done so in a good way, and I'm encouraged by some of the things the chief of police is doing, some of the things that we're doing with community leaders, Impact One, Omaha Housing Authority, and other folks within the community to address some of the issues that have come up in relationship to gangs. We have roughly 82 gangs in the city of Omaha, but when I say that, many of those are inactive, some are still active, but over the course of several years, those are individual groups that we've identified as being involved in gang activity. Keep in mind, current active gangs, we probably have a dozen or so. Like I said, some of those gangs may have caused us problems 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe have addressed them, and they're no longer as active as they were several years ago, but we still maintain information on those groups in case they were to come back in and start causing trouble again. You know, we have anywhere from 2,500 gang members that we have that we keep a close eye on. And I give you those numbers just to put it in perspective, but again, when I say that, those could be individuals that were arrested, incarcerated, and been in prison for several years. We still have information and we keep up to speed on their activities because we have gang activity in the correctional system as well. Things that occur in the correctional system can influence what we see on the streets relative to violence and things of that nature. I'm going to go back again so I can put it in perspective because I don't want folks thinking that we have 2,500 gang members running the streets of Omaha. We don't. We have probably 25 to 30 that are our most active. The large majority of the activity that we see in relationship to violent crime is caused by a small number of gangs and a small number of gang members, but they can cause some of the greatest problems within the community. We have incidents that occur in North Omaha, South Omaha. I did a story with Channel 3 last week regarding some of the gang activity. I'm going to do another one with Channel 6 later this afternoon, and the question always comes up, where is the gang activity? Where are these things occurring? And it can occur anywhere in the city of Omaha. We've seen homicides in West Omaha at clubs that we believe had gang activity behind them. We've seen incidents in North Omaha, South Omaha. So we have to be diligent in what we're doing. Probably one of the largest things that we see now and that we're trying to address is firearms. We've talked about it in a couple of different operations that we've done over the course of the last year. There's a lot more firearms that are in circulation, largely in PAC because of what we saw with 9/11, and more folks have started to arm themselves for personal security. But when that happens, sometimes they end up in the wrong hands, whether it's burglaries or what have you, and those guns, there's more guns in circulation. So we've had a large focus of our resources and our investigations. Last year alone, the firearm squad, which is part of the gang unit, worked closely with Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and conducted an operation called Wipe It Down, where nearly two dozen individuals were indicted for prohibited firearms cases, and specifically straw purchasing. What we've seen is a trend of individuals that are legally allowed to purchase weapons will go get the weapons and then turn them over to people that are illegal or prohibited from having those weapons, like gang members and convicted felons. And that's where we've developed a lot or put a lot of our resources into those type of investigations. Let me give you an overview of the gang unit and some of the things the chief has done to try and address some of these issues. Over the course of the last year, he's increased our suppression squad. There's a lieutenant, which is myself, that's over the gang unit, and I have eight squads that work with me. Our suppression squads work in the streets Monday through Friday, or Monday through Sunday, 7 days a week now, basically during the day and in the evening shift. Last shift change, the chief added a day shift crew because we started to see incidents like Peyton Benson, the young six-year-old girl who was killed during the day. And we started to see trends where some of the gang members knew when we had our resources available, so we have to adjust to make sure that we're adequately addressing the issues that are occurring. So we added a day shift crew that works on the streets, and we have an afternoon crew that can work anywhere from 1 o'clock in the afternoon till 4 o'clock in the morning. And we adjust those shifts depending on the things that we're seeing in the city, whether it be activity at clubs or whether it be activities at other locations. Our firearm squad, as I stated, is incorporated within the gang unit because gang members carry guns, and a large volume of the cases that we have are involved gang members. Just since the first of the year, we've had over two dozen significant gang members that have been arrested for gun offenses. We work closely with the legislature. We work closely with the city prosecutor's office and the county attorney's office to make sure those individuals are getting stiff sentences to the best of our ability. We also have a fugitive squad that works with us, and last year put almost 1,200 individuals in jail that had felony warrants. They again work with us because a lot of the individuals that are fugitive or have active warrants are involved in gang activity. I talk about some of those things from a prevention standpoint. We do a lot of proactive work in the streets. We do a lot of investigative work when it comes to search warrants and things of that nature. We work closely with the community in Impact One, and you'll hear from Janae Pancook here shortly, but we have a very collaborative effort. We're in constant contact with the things that she's doing in the community so that we're working together. It's important that we work with the community. Ann asked me earlier at the beginning of the luncheon, do we think that the cooperation that we're getting from the community is getting better? And absolutely. And that's integral to the community, the Omaha Police Department, and the community as a whole, addressing violent crime and things that go on. We can't be everywhere all the time, the police department, that is. And we need the help of the community. And we saw it in the Peyton Benson case. With the increase in the Crime Stoppers funds, we're starting to get more phone calls. And we've seen it in some other cases. Just within the last couple of weeks, my officers were involved in a traffic stop. And an individual discarded a weapon out the window. And that's going to take an investigation. There's several individuals in the car, most of which are prohibited from having the weapon, and that's why they discard it. And we had a party come forward and provide us information as to who they saw throw the weapon out the car, and that's integral. I mean, we're still going to do our investigative work, but that's important for the public to know, and that their help is going to get somebody like that off the streets. Some of the other things that we're working closely on, this is 2014, and social media is a huge part of what we do. We're seeing now more where years ago, individuals that had problems in the streets ran into each other on a street corner at a mall, and they exchanged words. Now they can go to a click of a button. They can Facebook, Twitter, you name it as far as social media, and they can disrespect or cause problems with another group within the community, which we, in turn, can see problems, and Impact One can see problems as a result of that. So we have to be constantly on the cutting edge of what's going on in the community, what's going on with technology, to make sure that we're ahead of that. We have an intelligence squad that work for me as well, and that's their sole responsibility is to try and be ahead of the intelligence on what's going on in the streets. Probably the biggest compliment you can get is when somebody thinks you're doing well at something, they want to come and see how you're doing things. And it was reported a couple of months ago where Kansas City Police Department came down and wanted to see some of the things that we're doing. Part and parcel because of how close we work with our federal partners, like I talked to you about with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We also work with the FBI, the DEA, and we have such a close working relationship. We're having a lot of success on these cases, and Kansas City came down, and we shared secrets, if you will. We shared recipes and found out how they were doing things, and they found out how we were doing things. I spent a little bit of time, and I don't want to take all the time because I want to hear from Janae, and I know you do as well, but I spent a little time, most of this time, talking about enforcement, but what a lot of people don't see is the intervention side. And 4 years ago, it's been reported, we started a gang specialist program where we hired a previous gang member that had turned his life around, was involved in the clergy, was involved in the community, and realized how gang activity impacted his life. His name was Chevis Johnson. He has since left us for family reasons and went out to California, but the amount of activity and the work that he did in that four-year period of time has directly impacted some of the positive things we've seen in the community. He started a curriculum in the Douglas County Correctional Center called Turf Talk, where he worked with youth and taught them how, once they get out of jail, how to do interviews, how to do resumes, how to start their own job. And we've been to a 360 meeting where a young man, and he's been interviewed by the media, he showed up at the meeting, he got out of the county corrections, went through Chevis's program and started his own company. And now people within the community are starting to use this individual and help his community grow. We recently hired a South Gang specialist, and they do the same thing. They go into the schools, they educate youth at a young age as to the problems and the pitfalls with gang activity. They answer questions, they educate parents what to look for in relationship to gang activity and things of that nature. We do a lot of community policing activities. I encourage my officers to go to community organizations, Victory Boxing, Boys and Girl Club, meet the kids. I don't want the kids to know my gang officers, investigators, as the individual that arrested their loved one or made contact with them in the street during a traffic stop, which sometimes can be a little intimidating. We want to make contact with them at the Boys and Girls Club, Victory Boxing, Hope Center, and let them know that we're concerned about their well-being. We want them to flourish as youth and as young men and as adults, and that we're approachable and we can help them in any way that we can. And what a lot of people don't know is we have a gang officer named Tony Espejo that started a soccer program years and years ago, and he started it as a gang officer on the street where he saw youth in South Omaha playing soccer or involved on the street corner, involved in things they shouldn't be involved in. And he got them involved in a soccer program. He's going to have close to 1,000 kids playing soccer. And he's gotten some grant funds. He provides them jerseys, fields, and things of that nature. And some of those kids have grown up to mentor other youth. He's now turned it over into a baseball program. And we have gang officers, probably the proudest, I'll leave you with this, probably one of the proudest points of my career was last summer when I was riding around and I knew that there was a baseball game going on near 20th and O Street. And this baseball league that these Tony Espejo and some other gang unit officers started were playing a league with some South Omaha and North Omaha kids, and they were playing each other. And I went out there, and I had officers that were coaching third base, coaching first base. One was pitching, and one was umpiring. And they were working with these youth for hours on a summer night. And then 3 hours later, they were down in the streets of the city trying to protect the community. And that's a 360 view of community policing, what we're doing from an intervention standpoint, what we're doing from a prevention standpoint. They're starting a volleyball program, tremendous things. The Black Police Officers Association just started their own baseball league in North Omaha. So we're doing a lot to try and help and educate the youth and help the community. As far as the gang issues are concerned, I couldn't be more optimistic about the plans the chief has in place, the extra resources he's provided us to try and address this issue, and the working partners like Impact One, Omaha 360, I mean, you name it, OPS, and we're all in this together to make sure that we can address any issues and concerns that the community has relative to the gang issues. I'll end with that, and then I think after Janae's done, then we'll open it up to questions. Thank you very much.
Along with Ken, I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Impact One was started in 2009, as Ann mentioned, and really it was the brainchild of a great deal of violence that was taking place in North Omaha in summer of 2007-2008. A lot of young people were dying. Gang violence was at an all-time high, and it was like, okay, what needs to happen for this to change? Impact One was formulated really to try and figure out what are some of the core causes, which really in the initial stages was employment. Let's find something during the summer to get kids involved in something positive and find employment opportunities. And that has grown to the summer jobs program that the Empowerment Network now facilitates. And I believe I just heard they have 300 youth employed through that program right now. Impact One basically spurred off of that program, and we respond to when there's a shooting in the community. We'll respond to the scene, again, in partnership, collaboration with the gang unit, Omaha Police Department. They'll notify us. Sometimes we get notified from the families that there's been a shooting, but we'll respond to the scene. We try and comfort family members, victims of the scene. We'll respond to the hospital. Many times family members show up at the hospital, mediate there. There's many times where obviously emotions are running high. Try and facilitate between the medical personnel, the family members, what's happening, what's taking place, so communication stays open. That's one aspect we do, is that emergency response. Another aspect we do, and I should state this, there are eight of us that are full-time. Myself, the rest of the staff, there's one executive assistant who is a non-former gang member. Everyone else are former gang members that have been, lived this life, have the street credibility, have seen the devastation, and they'll be the first to tell you they've created devastation and mayhem in the street. They've seen what that's done. They have kids of their own, grandkids, and they have been living a different life for many years, and now they are giving back to the community, and they've been doing it for several years, many of them. So that's how we're able to gain the relationship and the trust for, when I said families call us when an incident happens many times. So there's one aspect there. We will help at funeral services as far as if a family needs help finding a funeral home, if they need help putting an obituary in the paper, they need help serving at the repast dinner, if they need help cleaning up afterwards, whatever we can do to help that family during that period. And then we'll follow up periodically a month or so, even years afterwards, with the family members. We go door to door and knock on doors of individuals that we know are active gang members and ask them to come be a part of a program we have that's called Game Changers Program. And actually, individuals that are extremely high-risk gang members came up with the name Game Changers Program. They named it themselves. We started that program about a year ago, and Ken can testify to some of the members that we have that are extremely high-risk individuals. We're confident that they have committed some significant crimes in the city, but yet they're smart enough or have had other people maybe take the fall for them or whatever they've done that they can't be prosecuted. But yet we want to have them stop doing the crimes they're doing because what they're doing is so devastating. So we pay them $7.25 an hour up to $10 an hour for 20 hours a week. We put them through educational programming. We'll put them through employability programming. We're really trying to work on trauma-informed care. That's because if you don't get to the core of what's going on with the trauma-informed care, the PTSD, domestic violence, all those kind of mental health, substance abuse, self-medicating issues, then it's just going to continue that cycle. You can get a job, but you're not going to be able to keep a job. And we've been running that program for years. So we go door to door and actually recruit young men and women to join that program. So that's another aspect we're doing. We've had a total of 59 individuals in that program over the last year. We've had some get expelled. We do have expectations for them that they need to adhere to. And we've had 12 find full-time gainful employment that have graduated, if you will. Now they come back and they're mentors for new individuals coming through. We've had them pay, because it's regular payroll, so they've paid $17,670 in child support, which they were not paying child support previously, obviously, with some of their income not being reported. They have paid $10,972 in taxes. Impact One has paid $157,000 to this group in payroll, and statistics and data will show for every dollar you spend on intervention or prevention is $15 return on the backside. For this group, I think I could argue pretty easily that $15 is a very low number because of the types of crimes these individuals were committing. That cost is much higher than $15, but 15 is easy to prove for me, so I go with 15. So at what we pay them, that's over a savings to the community of over $2.3 million in a year with this focus group. We are constantly recruiting. There's hopefully going to be more data to prove that this program is part of what's helping gun violence go down, because we strategically go after the highest risk individuals for this particular program. The other piece that Impact One does is we go to the alternative schools during the school year. We go to Blackburn, North High School, South High School, Omaha Street School in the mornings at lunch, and then after school, we have after school programs. Our staff go there. We create basically mentorships, friendships. We meet with parents and those things. We've had incidents where parents will contact us. They found drug paraphernalia or drugs in their child's room or their car or something. They'll call us and say, we need help with this. We don't want to call the police, but can you help us refer, because we don't want our child going down this path. Research will show that to prevent individuals from gang activity, it's age 8. After age 8, you're on the intervention side. I know everybody, does that not scare you? Age 8. This year was our first year we started going into an elementary school, Miller Park Elementary. We collaborated with the 2 sixth grade teachers and supported their efforts with goal setting, positive peer interaction, bullying, you know, lack of bullying, all those kind of things. So next year we're already connected with Omaha Public Schools. It was such a successful pilot. We're going to expand to 4 more elementary schools next year, so we can get more on that preventative side, and we'll still continue in the high schools, but now we'll get to follow them through middle school and then on into high school. And then one of the last major pieces that Impact One does, we run a summer jobs program for 13, 14, and 15-year-olds, and it is thank you to Mutual of Omaha Foundation for this. They sponsor us for this program, and these are individuals that their deficits are so significant, or the parental, foster care, guardian, whomever is their caretaker, deficits are so significant that, you know, to have copies of their tax returns copied to qualify for other summer jobs, or having to go to the parental person or guardian to go through an orientation or something like that, they're just not going to do that to have their kid qualify. So we don't have the parents have to do all that stuff. We have, obviously, ID and those things, but if you show up, we pay a stipend, and we focus on literacy, employability. They do community service one day a week, and then we do some fun activities within there too, but really try and get away from that brain drain, but that employability piece. And again, it's a 13, 14, 15-year-old set, and we do that all summer long. And that's the big pieces of Impact One. That's it. Thank you. Thank you again for the time.
We have a lot of questions here, a lot of questions. And so I had just one, though, as I was sitting listening to both of you, how do you work together if Janae's organization knows that they may have some people who have committed illegal acts? They're trying to help them, but your job is to arrest people who have committed illegal acts. How does that work together?
That's a great question. And I mean, it really is. And the thing is, we have to work together because our job, and the chief has said this before, isn't going to get solved by arresting individuals. We can't arrest ourselves out of a gang problem. Janae talked about going into the elementary schools and educating youth. And the great question is, we're going to continue to investigate the crimes that people have committed. And if we get enough probable cause, then we're going to arrest those individuals, whether they're in Janae's program or not. And she knows that. Mm-hmm. And we know that some of the people we run into on the street, Janae is working with, and her group, Impact One, is working with on a day-to-day basis. The bottom line is if somebody isn't working with those youth, regardless of how active they are or how violent they are, they're going to be even more violent, and they're going to be even more active involved in illegal activity. So any work that Impact One can provide to slow that down or rehabilitate is going to be beneficial to the police department and the goal that we have. But we're still, if they break the law, it's our job to arrest them and put them behind bars. But we work very well together. Phone calls and those shooting scenes that Janae talks about are important, because individuals will show up at the hospitals, and retaliation can happen within minutes from these incidents occurring. And Impact One has those relationships because they're previous gang members, and they can slow that stuff down and help us tremendously with regards to that. And Janae, I'll let you answer as well.
Well, I just say the collaboration is imperative, because there's times, quite honestly, where, and this happens fairly frequently, is that they'll run into in their outreach when they're at the baseball leagues or basketball, where they'll see a high-risk kid that maybe they're not breaking the law yet, but they can see those indicators, and they're like, hey, we saw this kid, we got his name. Can you guys reach out to them and just make contact and see if there's something you guys can do on your end before it gets too far down the road? So we can do that part. And by the same token, there's some that we reach out to that we're just like, you know what? They're just not ready, and we know they're wreaking havoc and doing some things and causing a lot of damage to a lot of people and a lot of families in the community. So can you guys reach out to them, and is there something we can do on that end? You know, not giving information, keeping things confidential, but it's like, you know, we're really trying, but this person really is not ready. So, you know, it is a collaborative. We all want the same thing. We want safe communities, safe families, and everybody to be healthy. We just come at it from two different angles, but we need all the angles to make it happen.
Right. How do you convince a gang member to accept $7.25 an hour when their crime activities could result in a lot more money?
You don't. They do. You know, and that's the bottom line. We don't convince them of anything. We give them an opportunity. If they truly want to do something different, they don't have to worry about a background check. They don't have to worry about, oh, I have a felony pending, or I have charges pending, or I don't have a work history. I'm a current drug user. I'm going to fail a UA. They don't have to worry about all that stuff. Just come in the door. So we don't convince them of that at all. They want it. We just give them the opportunity.
And just to add on that, and Janae, correct me if I'm wrong, the thing about it is everybody has to make that decision if you have an issue that you're dealing with, and even if it's gang activity, and if you reach rock bottom. And some of these individuals, frankly, 725 looks better than getting shot at and going to the ER. Some of these individuals I know personally that she's worked with have been shot multiple times. And some kids get it and understand, and sometimes they outgrow it, like the folks that are working with her, and they finally have that realization that this, you know what, I was younger, I was dumber, it didn't make any sense, and now I'm starting to become a little more educated, and they're tired of getting shot. And even though it's only 725, it's not going to get them killed.
Yeah. What? I'm sorry. So one other thing, to go in part with that, is they like not necessarily having to watch their back, so they like the release of stress. They finally figure out, I don't have to live on such a tightrope all the time.
What is at the root of gang activity? Is it generational? Is it it's a good way to make a living? Is it their lack of employment?
All the above.
All the above.
And it's more. All the above. It really is. And the home structure is important. That's why we run some groups. Our South Gang Specialist is starting a parenting group in South Omaha, because parents need to recognize things. But some of these kids don't have parents. Some are raised by grandparents. and some of the folks may not be employed. Employment's a huge piece. Janae talked about it, the Step Up program, and we talk about it at all our meetings in the community, that employment and things to do are a huge part of it. And some of it is generational. We read that in articles in the paper, you know, with regards to some of the things that have occurred where dad's a gang member, brothers and sisters and gang member. I've heard gang members talk to their little ones, and little ones talk about Robin when they get older and things like that. So some of it is generational, so we have to address it from all those different fronts.
What role do young girls and teens have in the gangs?
Well, this is a good group because these are fantastic questions. We've seen more females become involved, both victims and both involved in gang activity, and sometimes they can instigate some of the situations that are going on, and gender doesn't stop us from keeping a close eye on individuals that are involved in gang activity. Females do get involved in gang activity, some of them even violent crime, and we've seen more of that in recent years, so that's how we have to continue to work with different groups, and we have female officers that may be able to get in, relate more one-on-one, and you have female Impact One folks that work with those individuals, but that's something we absolutely keep an eye on. We do see female gang members.
And a lot on the behind the scenes, I would say, too. You know, especially with social media, I don't know what it is. Us females, we like to talk a lot more, and we can push the buttons and play both sides and get, you know, go flirt with one individual just to get them in a position to go try and fight somebody else. And so sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, pushing the right buttons to get them to go fight each other for whatever reason. Just a lot of instigating. You see that with the female, even though they're not in the gang, but they're pushing the buttons of the gangs to get them to go shoot at each other or do whatever.
Lieutenant, I know you said that the community was helping more, but we often hear that the prosecutors will say, well, that's good that somebody came forward, they did this or they did that, but there just isn't enough there to move forward. What's going on there, and are you developing the kind of information that prosecutors need?
We are, and that's obviously, that can be frustrating to a community. We talked about it at the last 360 meeting, last community meeting, where I talked about individuals that have been arrested for multiple gun offenses and now are released. I mean, the county attorney, city prosecutors still have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt when they go to court that occurred. And some of the individuals will provide us information, but some may not be willing to go to court. When you provide information to Crime Stoppers, it's anonymous. And that's great to help us with the investigation, but that in and of itself isn't going to get them convicted of the crime. We still have to put the investigation together. But it's that the important thing is that we're all working together. Give us the information, let us put the investigation together, and we continue to work on that. We've worked a lot better in over the course of the last several months and years with the county attorney's office, city prosecutor's office, and they come to these meetings with us. And even in recent weeks, we've had individuals that are going up for bond hearing. They want to have their bond lowered, and the county attorney will reach out to us and say, what do you know about this individual? And we'll give them information to provide to the judge, and guess what? Their bond didn't get lowered. An individual that was going in for a gun offense, and their sentencing comes up. And I've told them, reach out to us. We have a lot of intelligence that we can provide you for that sentencing hearing, and now all of a sudden some of the sentences are getting doubled. So that's how we're working together to try and do our best to make sure they get long sentences and to make sure we put a strong case together so they are adjudicated in the right way.
So the police chief was recently quoted as saying, if you take out the gang and gun violence, we're the model city in the country. So is he saying gang activity is increasing? Are you making a dent in it? Are you holding it at a level?
Absolutely. Well, I think we're making a dent in it. If we weren't doing the things that we're doing, it would certainly be getting a lot worse. And we see constantly, and I can't go into all the stats and numbers with the second quarters and things, but we're constantly evaluating our numbers. We're looking at trends. We're looking at patterns. We have a large city, and we're going to have violent crime. I wish we weren't, but you know, I wish I could say that we're trying to completely eliminate gangs, but a big city is going to have some of those issues. The important thing to focus on, as far as I'm concerned, is that we have the resources in place and we see positive things. There's not a lot of cities that can talk to you about gang officers putting together a soccer program with 1,000 kids on the street. And how many of those 1,000 kids that are playing soccer this afternoon and over the course of the weekend would be involved in gang and gun activity if they weren't playing soccer and playing baseball and things of that nature? So our goal is to get rid of gang activity, to completely eliminate violent crime as best we can, at least to make sure it's going down and make sure the city's safe.
Is there still profit in gang-related activity?
profit from a standpoint of that gang member. I mean, there is drug trade that goes on, and it is lucrative from a gang member's perspective. And that's why we work with these federal agencies. We have folks that work on the short term. We refer to them as suppression officers that work every day, make traffic stops, answer calls, respond to shootings. But we also have several detectives assigned to long-term investigations, some of which have culminated in Purple Haze, where a lot of money is seized, forfeited because it's involved in drug trade, cars, things of that nature, and people are taken off the streets because of that drug trade. So there is a drug trade that we have to concern ourselves with, that gang members are involved in, and if that's out there and they can make that kind of money on a street corner, that's going to be enticing for you. So we have to address it from that front as well.
We used to think of North Omaha as the only place for gang activity. Then we recognized it's in South Omaha, and I think most recently with the murder of the mom out in West Omaha, we pretty well realized that it can be anywhere. But your main focus, I would assume, is still in the north and south areas of Omaha?
We look at the trends and the patterns where the violent crime is occurring, and we allocate our resources relative to that. But you're right, it can happen anywhere. And I mentioned that a few minutes ago, where we had a young lady, a beautiful young girl, that was killed in a club out in West Omaha, Southwest Omaha, I think it was last year. And so gang crime can happen anywhere. That's why, from an intelligence standpoint, we pay close attention to club activity, rap concerts, things that we think might generate that type of crime. But we allocate our resources where we see a lot of those activities, and we're going to continue to put officers in those locations where we see the most gang activity.
Janae, when you're talking to these elementary school kids, and what do they say to you? What is their attitude about this, and how can you turn that around so that they don't go down the path of gang activity?
Really, I think the biggest thing is listening to start with, to see where they're at, and let them know there's something different. We had an incident where he was 8 years old, had a weapon out in front of the school. We saw him with the weapon, knew his name, called the police. The police came. By the time the police got there, he had already hid the weapon. The police came. He was given a false name. Police came in, asked us, did we know him? Said, yeah, I gave him the right name. And so by age 8, this individual knew to hide a gun, knew to give false information to the responding police officers, and then knew when they came in the school we were going to say what the right name was. So it starts young, obviously, and it just that consistent. One, there has to be an alternative. There just has to be an alternative. Then it's just that consistency of messaging and that, they're, and I know it sounds so simple, but hope. You don't know what you don't know. So until somebody allows you to have hope that there could be something different, then you're going to do what you know. And I think that's our biggest asset, is that we provide that, even if it's just for a flash of a second, that spark that there's hope, there could be something different.
Lieutenant Kanger has said that he feels like he has the resources he needs. What do you need?
Well, I think if you talk to any nonprofit that's working with this population, there's always seems to be a lot of money, especially when you look at corrections budgets and those things. Those aspects have always gotten significant funding. Of course, you ask them, they never have enough funding either. But funding, but funding is a piece of it, but you have to have the right people, the right strategies, effective strategies, performance-based strategies in place, and the right people performing them. I'll be the first to admit, I would not have the same response going to some of the crime scenes that my staff does, and I would not be able to build the same rapport. So even if I had a bunch of funding for Impact One, hiring a bunch of more people that look similar to me Impact One wouldn't be as effective. So growing the individuals, like many of the game changers, I have several that I would love to hire as being new case managers, because they do have that credibility and they get it now and they could be good mentors, and those individuals will listen to them and they have that clout. So that, and just in really developing the jobs is the other big thing. We're really trying to work on, if anybody's ever heard of Homeboy Models in Los Angeles, California, it's probably one of the premier gang intervention models in the country, where a Jesuit priest, kind of the same situation, individuals that were high risk could not get jobs. And so he created a bakery. And said, okay, and somebody asked him, why a bakery? And the building that they were able to get for the price he could afford, which I think was donated, happened to be a bakery. He said, well, if it would have been upholstery, we'd be doing upholstery right now. You know, that was his response. But it was a bakery, and so they started doing bakery. And I think they're up to 9 industries now. But so he just employed them, and they taught him skills, and then they graduate on. And so we're actively seeking to start a garment, a T-shirt business in North Omaha, just for that purpose, so these meaningful job training skills, accountability, soft skills can work with these game changers, so that then they can go on to meaningful, you know, getting a job's one thing, keeping it is a totally, totally different piece, especially not just the job, but then let's grow into a career. Because my ultimate goal is that their grandkids say, you know, I heard my grandpa used to be a badass. I hope I can say badass, but I heard he used to be a badass. You know, that it's so far removed from their grandkids of sleeping in bathtubs, not being able to have the lights on at night because of silhouettes in the windows, because fear of being shot, that they don't have to have boards over the windows. They can have their mattress up off the floor and actually on a box spring because they're not afraid of bullets coming through. I remember my grandparents. I mean, I want that concept to be so foreign to them as it was when my grandparents said, oh, yeah, when we rode in the car, we would heat bricks up in the fireplace and put them in the back seat of the car for heat during the winter when they would drive. And I thought, well, why don't you just turn the heat on? You know, and it was so foreign to me. Well, that's how foreign I want their grandkids to think about having to sleep in a bathtub. You know, but it's going to take, you know, we're in our fourth generation, so it's not going to be 10 years from, I mean, it's not going to be 10 years from now. It's going to be a couple generations, but that's my ultimate goal. But the hope has to be there, the jobs, but, you know, that history and all those things. It has to be meaningful, gainful employment. So that was a really long answer to a really short question. Sorry.
Good answer. Lieutenant, do we have that International Cartel Association going on in Omaha?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, obviously, there are drugs that are brought in from, obviously, other states and from outside the country. We've had in cases in years past, homicide cases, where we knew that marijuana was coming in from Mexico and different things, and it can cause homicides and different problems. I don't know that we have a large cartel, but there's drugs are going to be brought in from outside the country and outside different states that we're going to have to address. It's not a large problem, but it's something that's the reason the gang unit, narcotics unit, and all those groups work closely together, because we got to attack it from both angles.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Janae Pancook and Lieutenant Ken Kanger. Our thanks to our audience here at the Press Club and our KIOS radio audience, and a special thanks again to both of you. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a presentation titled Gangs in Omaha. The guest speakers have been Lieutenant Ken Kanger, a 21-year veteran of the Omaha Police Department and the man in charge of the department's gang unit, and Janae Pancook, Executive Director of Impact One. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, June 19, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be this Thursday, July 24th at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Cliff Robertson, Senior Vice President of Divisional Operations for Catholic Health Initiative and Chief Executive Officer of Catholic Health Initiatives Nebraska, Southwest Iowa Network. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.